Women Must Know, every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. A very longtime friend of mine, Dr. Mark Schoen, is my guest, and he is a filmmaker, among many other things. Mark is just a fascinating guy and a really good man. Hello, Mark. It's nice to have you on my program again. It's been too long.
Hello, Diana.
Yes, and we're going to have fun this hour. But before we start talking about your filmmaking and when you come back next year, January 10th, I think is the part two, we're going to talk about the documentary that you're currently making. We'll talk about your last documentary, Trans Some. We'll mostly talk this hour about your website, which is a fabulous website, sexsmartfilms.com. But let's talk about how far back you and I go. Shall we? Do you remember?
it's got to be 20 years.
Yeah, I think it's about 20 years. And I think we met at one of the A Sector Quad S meetings.
That would make sense. We've both been to a lot of them.
And I've made a number of sex ed videos for the Sinclair Institute, narrating them. And for how many years you were the main filmmaker for them?
I was there for 8 years, and before I was with them, I worked as an independent producer. So I worked on films for them for probably 11 years.
11 years total, Sinclair.
And probably made about 36, 37, at least 1 hour films.
And on Sex Smart Films, you have all of those Sinclair Institute films, including the ones that I'm helping to narrate.
Yes. And we just made an arrangement where all the Sinclair sex education films are on sexsmartfilms.com, and we now have probably 430 films dealing with sexuality from 50 different countries. In fact, the site was reviewed recently, and the one line I remember from the review said, "It's the Netflix of sex education."
That's very true. It is. And your website is so easy to navigate, and you get so much information there. I think that lots of people need more information and perhaps a better attitude or simply a little inspiration. And they can get all of that on Sex Smart Films. And you and I also, just to go back to our history, we have, unfortunately, our mutual friend, we had our friendship with Candida Royale, and she died a year ago. And that was such a loss for you, for me, for thousands of people. And she was a real pioneer in erotic films for couples to watch. And as far as I know, she was the first producer, director, writer, starting in 1984, to make films for couples to watch.
That's true. And she was also the first woman to do it.
Yes.
Because if you look at the adult film world, it's dominated by men. Mm-hmm. And her films gave a woman's perspective to sexuality. And I think I know she was a real pioneer. She took some bold moves.
Yes. My friendship with her started in 1988, and I met her at one of the conferences, and it was further developed in 1991 when we were at the World Congress for Sexology in Amsterdam. What a terrific place that was to hold a World Sex Conference, Amsterdam.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I missed that one.
You missed a good one, too. She invited me to go out with I'm just blanking on her name. Exe is her nickname, and she was the happy hooker, and she is Dutch, and you know who I'm talking about. But I'm out. Anyway, we all went out, and it was a wild night. But back to Candida Royale. You know, she really is the RX, so to speak, for viewers who want some spice without the raunch. And she really did appeal to so many women. And her film, Three Daughters, which looks a little dated when I view it again, but it was selected for presentation at the annual Invitational Film Festival and then also the American Association for Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, ASECT. And so then she was given membership into ASECT, the first ever filmmaker to be accepted. But I'm sure you're a member.
Oh, yes. I've been a member for many years.
Yes, yes. How did you get interested in filmmaking?
Well, I started out as a school teacher and taught middle school in New York, and I was a health educator, and sex education was a component. And I found that there were no films, and photography was my hobby, so I started making my own films.
Yes.
And then when I started in graduate school, I was still making films, and one of the professors, Derek Calderwood, who was the director of the Human Sexuality Program at New York University, encouraged me to make more, and then we collaborated on some, and I eventually left my teaching job, and
the rest of history.
I've been doing producing and directing and distributing sex education films for my whole career. So,
and you've learned a lot about sex in the process, haven't you, Dr. Mark?
Oh, let me tell you.
Yes, tell me.
You know, someone asked me about the last documentary I did, which was on transgender.
Yes.
And here I've been in the field over 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, someone asked me if I learned anything making this film. And I said, I learned more about gender identity in the 3 years making this film than I had in the rest of my life.
Oh.
It was such an eye-opening experience for me. Mm-hmm. I never thought the gender spectrum was so wide, and it was really a learning experience. And traveling around the country, going to over 40 universities, showing this film, you really learn from the audiences. So...
Yes, it is, and you've shown that film at a couple of our conferences, and I have in my practice, well, I did have a male-to-female transgendered person, and I encouraged her to buy the film, and she was just totally enthralled, as most people are. It is eye-opening, but you as a filmmaker, you learned. And I think I learned, too. I first was aware of gender identity problems in 1994 when I went to Singapore for the World Congress on Impotence. It was still called that then. And there was a doctor who did some of the very first surgeries. And the thing he said was that there were a lot of men who wanted to have the surgery to be a woman because they were so put off by their penises that even in their adolescence when the hormones are raging, they couldn't even masturbate. They were just, they did not like their penis, so they didn't masturbate. I thought, wow, you know, that's telling something.
Oh, yes. And, you know, I'll never forget, I was at one university doing a screening, and there were probably 150 attendees, and one of the people on my panel was a 50-some-odd-year-old transgender person who appeared in the film.
Yes.
And I remember a student who also had a very successful business and had a family and then decided to transition. So one person in the audience said to her, "Why did you choose to be this way?" And her response was, "Who the fuck would choose this?"
Yeah.
And
exactly.
You know, so you know, there are a lot of people who don't understand that people are born this way. That is, and the research points to biological components that make someone this way. You know, so it's not a conscious choice.
Mm-hmm. It's a mistake to think that it is. I worry a lot about the next Trump administration coming up and what that might do, but we don't want to veer off. Actually, I did last week with a therapist named Ross Rosenberg, who's written a book on narcissists and codependence, and it's up on my website. And so we've definitely talked about Trump and narcissism last time, so we're not going to veer off into politics this time. But it is a little worrisome, right?
Yes.
Yes. So the trans film, it's probably changed a lot of people's views about transgender, and they've been educated. And then you had some very poignant interviews. I mean, the suicide rate, for one thing, is really high among transgendered people.
Yes. There was a survey done, a huge survey done with transgender people. And one of the questions was, have you ever seriously contemplated or attempted suicide?
Mm-hmm.
And the response, 41% said yes. In the general population, that same question, it's 1.6%.
Imagine.
So the rate in the transgender community is just unimaginably high. And when you think about why is it so high, you know, it's discrimination, it's rejection by family. I can't tell you how many young transgender people I met whose family discovered they were transgender and told them to get out of the house. And these kids have no way to make a living, have no place to live, and a lot of them resort to what I call survival sex work.
Yeah, survival sex work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on the street doing sex work because it's the only way they can survive.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the streets are dangerous. And I've seen terrible things happen. And I've interviewed people with stories that, you know, you wouldn't want your family to be involved in. So.
No, of
course
not.
We need to educate people about this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I met one person who had not come out to his family. He was a transgender guy.
Uh-huh.
And we were talking, and I said, "Why don't we send your mom a copy of Trans?"
Mm-hmm.
And I sent it to her with a little note.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a call from this guy a few weeks later thanking me. His mother watched it and called him and said, "Now I understand."
Oh, what a beautiful story, Mark. Oh,
so, you know,
I'm so touched by that.
Thing. Oh, and I'll give you one more if you want to be touched again.
Oh, I do. I always like to be touched.
I was doing a screening in Columbia, Maryland, in a church.
Yes.
And in walks a group of people with a 10-year-old child, a little girl. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, what is she doing here to see this film? Well, she sits through the film, which is 93 minutes. Mm-hmm. She sits through a question and answer period, which is almost an hour.
Yes.
And then she comes marching up to me with a piece of paper and a pen.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, would you sign this piece of paper? And I said, why do you want me to sign that piece of paper? She said, because my dad is transgender, and I learned a lot from this film.
Oh.
And I said to her, can you sit down with me and talk for a few minutes?
Mm-hmm.
And this young lady educated me.
Oh.
She told me that she knew her dad was different. She knew he loved her and she loved him, but she didn't quite understand why he was different. She said, this film Trans helped me understand my dad better.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I gave this girl a hug and I thanked her. And then she got up online. They were selling DVDs. She got online to buy a DVD. And I said to her, you get over here. And I handed her a DVD and thanked her for the education.
Yes, so. Of course. And she was a remarkable little girl. And also that she said she was 10. She loved her daddy, and she wanted to better understand him. It's a wonderful story.
Thank you. So now when people ask me what's the appropriate age for this film, I say, I don't know. Maybe as young as, 10. But, certainly it was appropriate for this girl.
Right. So people can go to sexsmartfilms.com.
Mm-hmm.
And they can buy a copy of Trans on your website.
Well,
is that not true?
If they want a DVD, or they can just watch it online. Right? I think it's about $2 to watch it online.
Yeah.
There are pay-per-views and subscriptions, but if someone wants to watch a single film, they could do a pay-per-view.
Yes.
But what has become very popular these days is we have a series of 250 commercials related to condoms and public service announcements about HIV from 50 different countries.
Yes, talk about that, because I know you talked about this very thing at a recent sex educators conference, and we spoke off the air. It's fascinating, and of course, this program on Progressive Radio Network is heard in different parts of the world, so... Yes, enlighten us about these commercials, these foreign commercials.
Well, the diversity in the commercials is amazing. If you look at what is shown in the United States on television, and then you look, say, to Switzerland or Norway, where you actually see nudity in a commercial, and there's another amazing thing. If you see a condom commercial, you actually see a condom.
Right,
you don't see that. You don't see that in American commercials.
That's true.
And I looked, I was wondering, what is the effect of showing explicit, nudity, condoms? And what I did was I went to the World Health Organization, and I wanted to know the HIV rate and the teen pregnancy rate in every country around the world. And I looked at the countries that show the most graphic commercials on their television, the most graphic public health messages. And lo and behold, they have the lowest HIV rates and the lowest teen pregnancy rates. Here in the United States, our rates are 5 or 6 times higher than most European countries. If you compare the United States and Switzerland, it's horrible.
Yeah.
If you compare the United States and Norway, we are a distant second. And when you think about who this is affecting, it's affecting our children. And mm-hmm. when I listen to our sex educators telling us what a wonderful job we're doing, well, in some respects, we're doing a wonderful job, but in other respects, we're doing a terrible job.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I think we have to take a look at our sexual attitudes and somehow do a better job of educating our young people.
We do. Sexual health is derived from positive sexual education. There is no question about it. And I'm really glad you're doing this work, and you're making a difference, Mark.
Well, and thank you.
You're welcome. So I want to, let's talk a little bit more about sex smart films. Therapists, including myself, use this and use this, your website. We tell our clients to go to it, and you have a wonderful little notepad where you leave space for this sex therapist, RX, what films to watch.
Yeah. Basically, I've given out prescription pads where a therapist mm-hmm. can prescribe a film. And the most watched single film is the first sensate focus exercise called Sexual Anatomy and Response. And when you think about it, you know, the most basic information is knowing your anatomy and your partner's anatomy, sexual mm-hmm. anatomy. And mm-hmm. this film goes into detail with sexual anatomy. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm amazed. I had a therapist tell me she had a client who was probably in her 50s and didn't know she had a clitoris. So,
well, you know, that doesn't surprise me too much. I do happen to see a number of Indian couples because Microsoft brings them over here to the Pacific Northwest, and some of these couples have had arranged marriages, so they haven't had sex. They haven't had sex education to begin with, for the most part. And then they haven't had sexual intercourse, or sometimes they can't even do it, but until their wedding night. But I've had any number of Indian men not know about the clitoris. And I think, you know, that's one advantage of having explicit films. I mean, you can actually show the anatomy and show the clitoris and show how to stimulate the clitoris, and we can learn so much visually.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't want a package coming to their home with a DVD in it. So being able to do this online assures privacy.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
you know, the technology has helped in the area of sexual health education, because you can go online, find the film you want to watch, whether it be, I mean, we have films dealing with sex therapy, sex education, sex research. We have new films, we have old films, and I sort of feel like we archive the films. And someone once said to me, in fact, recently, you know, I was showing a film and there was something one of the students disagreed with. So I said, mm-hmm. you are not going to find the perfect film. So mm-hmm. when you find something that's wrong with the film, use that as a teaching moment. Use that
yes.
as something to discuss, because it's so difficult to talk about your sexuality. It's much easier to talk about what you see up there on the screen than what I do in my own bedroom. And by talking about what's on the screen, it might make you more comfortable, so you can talk about what's in your own bedroom.
Oh, it's very true. It inspires lots of discussion. And you know, when you see a lot of sex on the screen, it's I think of it as a visual, sexual smorgasbord. You're going to see a lot of things. And so couples can watch and pick up new ideas about sexual experiences that they can have together. Actually, when I have a rating system that I give to couples, when I have them watch, well, for instance, Great Sex for a Lifetime, which is the most recent Sinclair Institute film that I did that's targeted at baby boomers. And I have you to thank, Dr. Mark Schoen, because you, I think, really strongly recommended me to the Sinclair folks before they did this as somebody who is knowledgeable about sexuality and aging. And, of course, I'm a gerontologist because of the studies that I did in the early 90s that were published in medical journals on aging and sexuality. So I do thank you again for that. But anyway, they can
those two, the Great Sex for a Lifetime Volume 1 and Volume 2,
yes,
are both on the website now.
Yes,
both
yes.
of those. So
and that's great because in the past when I've loaned out my copies, occasionally I don't get them back. So
well, so a lot of people, you know, are pleased that they don't have to have copies, you know, that they can watch online. It's more convenient. It's more convenient and less expensive. So
more convenient and less expensive. And you have so people just talk about the subscription rates and the pay-per-view rates. Just briefly, people can find it easily by going to Sex Smart Films, but give our listening audience an idea.
You know, if you wanted to watch the first Sensate Focus exercise, which is under a half hour, a pay-per-view for that is 99 cents. So a feature-length documentary, I think, is $2.99.
Right.
And a one month subscription is a little more than $16. A 3 month subscription is $34, and a 1 year subscription is $99. So the subscriptions give you 20 full unlimited access to 430 films, and we add films monthly. We started off 9 or 10 years ago with 46 films, and now we have 430 films.
Yeah, great. You're such an entrepreneur, among other things, Mark. That's great.
Well, one of the things, you know, we have sex education films for children.
Oh, yes. I wanted to say, because you have your most frequently viewed videos. Sensate Focus is the first one. Science of Orgasm is the next one. True Story of How Babies Are Made is 3, 4, The Science of Attraction, and 5, Trans. But, and I have the True Story of How Babies Are Made is a wonder. It's animated. It's wonderful. It's very good information.
Well, it is based on a book that was written in 1972 in Denmark by a man named Per Holm Knudsen.
Mm-hmm.
And I contacted him and told him I wanted to make an animated film, and he gave me his blessing. And it's hard to believe that here is a book that was written for 4 and 5 year olds in Denmark and was watched and read, you know, frequently by many, many families.
Yeah.
And here this film, people say, oh, I don't know if I can show it to my children, you know, I don't know if it's suitable for high school. And then I look at the research that says the average American sees porn on the internet between the ages of 11 and 14. And for the large majority of them, that is their only sex education.
It's shocking. It is stunning. I just saw a 24-year-old yesterday. He started watching porn. He's 24, right? So he started watching porn when he was 7 years old, and he had no sex education. And he has a very difficult time. He's still a virgin at 24, and you know, he it would have been so much better. And then some of these guys are having not this particular one, but are having erectile dysfunction problems from all this porn.
Well, and you know, the people who are producing porn films are not producing them to educate 11-year-olds.
No, of course not. Yes.
And, you know, they're producing films to entertain and titillate, not to educate.
Exactly.
So it's another something that irks me that we're not doing the kind of sex education that we should be doing. So.
Well, that's absolutely true. And I have recommended sexsmartfilms.com to some of the couples that I've been seeing. They've gotten good sex therapy from me. They've increased their times that they've had intercourse with pleasure, and they've conceived a baby finally. I mean, I have some of these nice success stories. It makes me so happy. They make a baby. And I've recommended your true story of how babies are made for them, just to have it as a resource for when their child gets older. Because I remember Sol Gordon. Remember Sol Gordon?
Of course.
Yes. And he said, by the way, for the listening audience, he was a wonderful man. He did a lot of sex education for adolescents, and he was also a professor, I believe, at Syracuse University. Anyway,
yes.
What he said is, we are the sex educators of our children, whether we want to be or not, and silence is a message. Am I quoting him more or less correctly?
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he also said, basically, you're teaching your children that sex is something we're not supposed to talk about.
Oh, yes. And, oh, I have so many clients like that. They came out of families like that. Yes.
And he said the children learn that lesson very well.
They do.
So.
And they keep secrets, and then that increases shame and guilt. And it's just the opposite of being sex positive. And when we're sex positive, then we can have really ecstatic, good sex. But
yeah, in the early 1980s, I produced a film called Belly Buttons Are Navels. And basically it was a grandmother reading a book called Belly Buttons Are Navels, which is still available on Amazon.
Is that right?
Reading this book to young children, and it's two young children, one of whom was my daughter, who is now, she was four, I think it was, she's 34 now, and it was,
right?
She was four in the film.
Oh.
And it teaches them the names of body parts from head to toe.
Yeah.
And to me, that was the most accurate, the most important thing to teach young children, and it was saying, these are names you can use. And I remember her coming home from school one day when she was in the first grade, and she walks in the door and says, Dad, you know, your anus is a cold, icy planet. And I said, what are you talking about? And she took out her weekly reader, and the headline was, Uranus is a cold, icy planet. And she said to me, I was the only one in the class that laughed.
I have a story to tell regarding navels and belly buttons. So my grandmother, who was an amazing woman, she was born in 1888. She went to Stanford University. She had a couple of master's degrees. She was a woman ahead of her time and a really fine sculptress and artist. Anyway, but she was raised in early Los Angeles and was a very proper Victorian young woman. Her father was a pioneer in L.A. and real estate and so on. And so she had a gentleman call her one day. She was, I think, still in high school. But she mentioned to the gentleman caller in front of her mother, who was chaperoning, of course, that would he like to have a navel orange? Later, her mother jumped on her for using the word navel in connection with the orange because it was a body part. And proper young ladies did not do that.
Wow.
I know.
I'll give you, while we're talking about body parts.
Yeah.
And I should be embarrassed to tell this story, but I will.
Uh-huh.
I was with my five-year-old grandson, and this was about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got his hand in his crotch, and he's holding his crotch.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, do you have to go to the bathroom?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no. I said, well, why are you holding your wiener?
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at me, and he said, Grandpa, it's not called a wiener. It's called a penis. And I thought, I wish I had videotaped that.
I know. Well, you can tell that story. So my daughter's sons are now 4 and 6, and when her oldest was, I think, just under a year, she said to me, Mom, you'll be happy to know that Cullen found his penis and is really enjoying it.
That's great.
Yeah. Well, one thing that you and I did as parents is to give our kids good sex education, and it makes all the difference, doesn't it?
I like to think I did a good job, but...
No, you did, even though you said wiener instead of penis.
Yes.
So on your website, sexsmartfilms.com, you have a lot under the education part, a lot of topics, and including, but this is not the full list, aging, arousal, consent. That's a big one these days.
Yes, a hot topic these days. You go
hot
to,
topic.
You know, because I remember way back two professors from the University of Kansas, Charlene Mullenhart and Zoe Peterson, and I'm talking 15 years ago, were doing things on consent, and it was not very popular.
Right.
And today... it is the hot, every college campus is doing something on consent. And more and more people are making films on consent. I think we have about 15 to 20 films on that topic. So it's real, and I think it's an important topic.
But are you getting the word out to universities and colleges? Some in person, but...
Well, lots of universities subscribe to the website.
Yeah, good. Excellent.
So if you're taking a human sexuality class, a professor, basically they walk into a classroom and they have 430 films, the access to 430 films. So if something comes up, so someone told me this thing about body parts came up for young children. And I don't know if you heard, last January, Sweden aired a 60-second animated cartoon of dancing genitals. And basically,
I didn't know about that.
It was on.
So it's a cartoon on dancing genitals.
In Sweden, and it was to teach young children the names of their genitals.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on television, national television, and they got some phone calls that there were some people who weren't happy about it. Anyway, I've got the film on the website. It's called Dancing.
Good.
It's only 30 to 60 seconds long, but
yeah.
When you see this was on national television in Sweden, and we, you know, won't even show them in a school or in a family. So it's worth taking a look at.
Is it, Mark, sort of a side question, is it hard to get permission to show something like this?
Where?
On your website. So, for instance, for this, the dancing genitals in Sweden.
Yeah, and by the way, it's called the Swedish genital song, not dancing.
Okay, the Swedish genital song. Okay, I'm making a note.
No, well, no, I have gotten permission from all sorts of ways. It's interesting, the commercials where I have 250 of them, I get them all from one company. And the story is, it's a company where if you were making a toothpaste commercial and you said, I want to see all the toothpaste commercials in North America that were made in the last 3 years,
mm-hmm.
you can go there and you can get access to them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I called them and said, I'm not producing anything now, but you have all these condom commercials, HIV commercials, commercials that have nudity in them, breastfeeding commercials,
yeah,
breast cancer. Anyway, I said, I want them. And I directed them to my website, and they got back to me, and they said, you mean you're only going to use these for education? I said, yes, that's all I'm using them for.
Yes.
And they gave me permission.
That's wonderful.
So.
See, a lot of people besides yourself they're concerned with more important issues than just making money, and they want to make a difference in people's lives. And I think it's wonderful. You know, that's we want to leave this world a bit. I know this sounds a little corny, but. I'm sure, you know, we all are getting older, and we want to leave a legacy of sorts, and to make a difference, to feel necessary, is pretty important to successful aging.
Oh, yeah. I'm there. You know, we have films that deal with adults, children, gay, lesbian, bisexual,
yes.
transgender.
Disability, which is your next,
yep.
your next
disability.
Documentary. Female
yes.
and male sexuality, masturbation, sexual power play. I do have some couples that are interested in exploring sexual power play, BDSM.
Well, we try to cover the gamut. And, you know, we don't cover everything, but we keep adding.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look, it's kind of interesting. I have one thing, historical sex education. And if you look at the films there and look at the films we have today,
mm-hmm.
it's a big difference. But,
yeah.
you know, some people laugh at those films. And I said, well, that's if we didn't have those films, we wouldn't have the films we have today, because that was the jumping point. That was the
yes.
point we started at. And we got a little more sophisticated as we went along. So there's
yeah.
one film that I really love, mm-hmm. and it's in the trans health category.
Trans health, okay.
It's called The Transgender Rap, and it's about a 10 or 11-year-old boy singing the song how he told his mom that he was transgender and how she helped him and how he came to be comfortable with himself. And it's when I do a screening of trans, after the Q&A, I end the program with that film, and it'll bring a tear to your eye.
So it's called The Transgender Rap. You're saying rap.
Right, like rap.
Like a rap song.
Music.
Yes. Yeah, I got it. Wow. So under on your website, the most viewed video, so we've talked a little bit about Sensate Focus, the science of orgasm, and
there's
a lot
attraction.
Of... What?
Those, you know, the people want some science to back up their... you know, what they're being taught. So those have become popular.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some close seconds, you know, that the sex therapy films are all very popular.
Mm-hmm.
the films that are the basic sex education films, like The True Story of How Babies Are Made.
Yeah.
You know, that's a real popular one. You know, so, and then, you know, the colleges will assign films for students to watch. So every professor has different criteria. So, you know, we have quite a range of films and quite a range of viewers. So you never know what people, where their interests lie. So we try to cater to all of them.
Well, you've really picked a fascinating, ever-changing, never-boring part of life to make your life's work. I think it's great. You're so well-suited for it, too.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. And so let's, before, because we only have, I don't know, 15 minutes, maybe a little less. We stop a couple of minutes before the top of the hour. You also talk about the science of attraction. This is one of your most viewed videos, and inside the brain is pretty important there. And so, as I understand it, the preoptic area of the hypothalamus, and that's the part of the brain that makes men and women feel turned on, is 2.5 times bigger in men and contains twice as many cells. So this may explain why men often think about sex a whole lot more than women do. We've been very fortunate to have functional MRIs available since the 90s, and that's when a lot of the brain research started, right?
Yes, yeah. In fact, Beverly Whipple, who I was just with at this last conference, whose research is on female sexuality, she was one of the early people using the MRIs on the brain.
Yeah, yep. She was. She's presented that in her presentations at our conferences. She also do some things having to do with pain and how reaching orgasm and being orgasmic helped with pain?
Yes. Yes, she did.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if your viewers recognize her name, but she was the one who came up with this concept of the G-spot,
mm-hmm.
Grafenberg
mm-hmm.
spot name. And she has kept dealing with female sexuality since probably before 1980. So she's one
That's
of the
true. That's
pioneers.
True. Yeah, her book on the G-spot was published in about 1980.
Yes, and because shortly after that, I did a film with her, which is on the website, and it was the first film about the G-spot, and it was called, you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm writing it down.
Orgasmic expulsions of fluid in the sexually stimulated female. And it's a 9-minute film, and she appears in it.
Uh-huh.
So, and
but not demonstrating
30,
it.
No, she was the
no, I know.
Researcher.
But no, Beverly Whipple is a very respected researcher. And I'm so glad she's still coming to our conferences. You know Jules Black?
Sure.
So I just got a happy 2017 email photo thing from him, and so he attached some photos of Beverly Whipple, myself, Lou Paget. We were all in Paris for the World Congress for Sexology at Le Tour des Argent, which is a restaurant that goes back to the 1200s.
And, uh-huh.
And Beverly Whipple, oh, and Linda DeVillers was in the picture. Did you? I don't think you were there for that Paris conference.
No, I
was. You missed another good one, Amsterdam and Paris.
I was working on a film, so.
Oh. So that was 2001.
Yep.
So that brought back memories, and it was kind of fun to be in that very ancient restaurant with all this tradition, and they number the ducks that they've made. This is just sort of little funny little details, but all good memories, because good food, good sex, it's all about the senses, right? And the five, well, you talk about the science of attraction, the brain, and then the five senses.
Yes. And that's a popular one.
Right.
You know, people want to understand why they behave the way they do sexually.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I like to emphasize is that people can do their own research and research things that they interest them and look at films that they feel that talks about their own sexuality. And then after you watch the film, it's good to be able to discuss them.
Mm-hmm.
So I always recommend watch the film with someone you're comfortable with, so you can talk about it after it.
Exactly.
Because the processing of the information is just as important as the viewing. So I always recommend that you watch a film because it has a particular interest. You put it in that interest context. You watch the film, and then you need to process the information. So,
yes, all of those steps are really important, and a lot of couples do pick up new ideas about sexual experiences, and that's good too. And of course, sexual enthusiasm is one of the hallmarks of explicit videos.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I think glimpsing the sexual passion and excitement of others, even if it's, quote, just acting, end quote, can often rev up a relationship.
Yeah, well.
And I hear about it afterwards. You know, they come back and say, we got some ideas. Or like I have in my practice, a guy who was born in Japan, And he got married and hadn't really had any kind of sex till he was 40. And he watched Great Sex for a Lifetime. And one of the things he said, it was normalizing for him because he said, I am touching the right way, you know, the right way. So
the right way for him.
Yeah, the right way for him. But he was reassured. He learned things, but he also was reassured that he's not just totally way out there. Watching things are really important for lots of people.
You know, and having produced these films, especially the films that have explicit sex scenes, I learn a lot. I'll tell you another interesting story. We were getting ready to shoot a sex scene. The couple was a young, married, college-educated couple. And we're shooting in a studio. And just before the scene is about to start, the young man says, can I ask you a question? I said, sure.
Mm-hmm.
And he pulls me aside. He didn't want to ask the question publicly.
Mm-hmm.
And he whispered, where do you want me to come?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, where did this guy get his sex education?
No doubt, Paul.
So So I said to him, when you and your wife make love at home, where do you come?
Yeah, good.
And he looked at me a little embarrassed and said, you know, I just come inside her. Yeah. And I said, you know, we are producing sexual realism. Uh-huh. I want you to do just what you do at home.
Perfect.
And that's what we did.
That's wonderful. Yeah. You know, I think you told that story in St. Louis in a presentation, and my son, who was then in Chicago, came over to meet me in St. Louis,
uh-huh.
and he came to that presentation with me, and he learned uh-huh. a lot. He learned a lot.
Good.
Yeah.
I like to hear that.
I know. I think I even introduced you afterwards. It was a long time ago. Probably 11 or 12 years ago now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But you were showing some behind the scenes work
oh, yes,
that you do.
We always did those behind the scenes because
yeah.
these were big relative to documentaries. You know, there were three camera shoots. You know,
yeah.
many of the shoots have one or sometimes two cameras. So we were doing, you know, quite a high level of production value back then.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Yes, you were. So, Mark, we're going to hear the music pretty soon since we stop a little bit before the top of the hour. So I'd like to tease your part two with me, January 10th, and that's about disability and making love after your new documentary, Making
it's
Love.
It's called Making Love After Making War. And if
yes.
you want to see it, if you want to get teased, go to loveafterwar.org, and you can
love
see one of the interviews.
Loveafterwar.org.
Yes. And
okay.
We've done four more interviews since that first one, and I literally cried during some of the interviews.
Mark, I love that you're sentimental too, among other great qualities. That's our music. So, thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Diana. You take care.
You too, and we'll talk again in the new year. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
PRN, the Progressive Radio Network, your home for progressive